Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias. It is time, Love Is Blind, to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. And I think I made this announcement on a previous episode. But as we are just in the dead days of the NBA season at this point, and the W season is going strong, and we're not too far off from the postseason. Quiet as kept, Steve. It's about time to ramp things up even more. We're going to be flipping the order of the pod in the next few pods. We're starting with the W. We're capping with the NBA. Unless we get something seismic happening on the NBA side, I think we can wait on any transaction news there. So all of our Boston Celtic thoughts are going to be coming at the end of the pod, just to give you the quick heads up. But as we record early on a Thursday afternoon, we are roughly 40 or so minutes away from the WNBA trade deadline passing. We've got some moves to talk about, Steve, some moves that have already happened. We had one trickle in a little bit earlier today as well. We're going to catch up on some W transactions, hopefully get some more trickling in as we approach the deadline. And then we're going to catch up on some hoops, some things that have caught our collective eyes across the WNBA season. And again, closing with some NBA news. But first, Steve, let's start with the Seattle Storm and the Washington Mystics. The biggest name that has been moved so far during deadline week: All-star guard, all-star wing, Brittany Sykes. She is now a member of the Seattle Storm. Going back to the Washington Mystics is Alicia Clark. She makes her return. Zaya Cook, who was immediately waived following the transaction being completed, and a 2026 first-round pick via the Seattle Storm. Sika Kone was also waived in order for this deal to be legal on the Washington side. So we start there, Steve. Brittany Sykes is now a member of the Seattle Storm. Has not made her debut yet, but that is coming soon. What were some of your early impressions or early thoughts about Brittany Sykes heading to Seattle?
I mean, I really like the swing from the Storm there. I like the fit for Brittany Sykes in Seattle. Defense is number one top of mind to me as far as what Brittany Sykes can bring to the table for the Storm. It's a big part of Seattle's identity and obviously number two in defensive rating. And you get to add a defender of the caliber of Sykes. That's pretty good midway through the season. Like, trying to score on Skylar Diggins and Brittany Sykes and Gabby Williams and Nneka Nwumike and Ezzy Mabigor does not seem very fun at all. So you kind of double down on your strength, put yourself in a strong position to have defensive versatility, especially with some of these teams that are, I mean, we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but it's a very competitive season, so you want to put yourself in a position to be able to navigate. So I understand why the Storm did that. I think offensively, obviously, it's been a great year for Brittany Sykes on that end. I think the drives are really going to help Seattle. I think the attacks and transition will help. Just having someone who can get downhill with force for Seattle team that can put itself in the mud sometimes in the half court and try to have to find and create an advantage later in the clock. I think this could help them go side to side more. If you have Skylar and Gabby and Sykes looking to get downhill with what Nneka and Ezzy do, I think it will enhance Erica Wheeler's minutes off the bench, is my assumption. But I like them taking a swing. And obviously, hey, we have picks. You can have this one.
we're gonna hold on to these other two for hashtag reasons. But I think we're fine with giving up our own. We're gonna bet on ourselves.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all.
I dig it. Like, I think for me, the doubling down on strengths, just to bounce off of that point, I think that's where you see the strength of this deal. Like, this is a Seattle Storm team that I understand the shooting concerns, and I've expressed some of those in terms of some of the volume. But I do think in general, this is a team that spaces well. And then when you have someone like Skylar Diggins that can still get downhill when she wants to, a Gabby Williams that can still get downhill, Nneka with some of the drives that she showcased this year, Erica Wheeler can generate paint touches. You now add Brittany Sykes into this mix, who can just break down a defense in the half court and get downhill. I think it's very valuable to the Seattle Storm offense. And I was listening to the Full Circle podcast with Lexi Brown and Mariah Rose, and Lexi was talking about the deal towards the end of the episode. And as she was detailing some of the, I guess, some of the weirdness or some of the statistical weirdness about the Seattle Storm, she's going into the possession battle that they seem to be losing. And It's a team that does not shoot a lot of threes. It's a team that defends very well, but they haven't been a great rebounding team on top of that. And one thing I would add, Steve, which makes it super funny in relation to the deal, the Seattle Storm, number 13 of 13 teams in free throw rate this year. Do you know who number one is?
The Mystics.
It is indeed the Washington Mystics. So I think if you're not going to add a volume three-point shooter, and again, we got 40 or so minutes before the deadline passes, we'll see if Seattle does anything else. At the very least, let's earn some extra points at the free throw line. Let's get some points at the stripe. That could be a way to kind of balance that out. I think Brittany Sykes is a good guard rebounder in her own right because of her athleticism. And just in general, she's not afraid of physicality. She's not afraid to mix it up there. Her juicing the transition attack, I think that could be a way, or those could be ways to kind of alleviate some of the like possession questions that you may have with Seattle. And in addition to, the defense is just still very good and very impactful. Can defend multiple positions, very good screen navigator on and off the ball. She can generate turnovers because of the way that she plays off ball. Can also jumpstart transition at opportunities because of the way that she can block shots as well. So all of those things are additive. It doesn't solve the very specific issues that Seattle still has, but in strengthening a strength and adding some juice getting downhill and getting to the line the way that Brittany Sykes has, this is a career year for her on that front. It could be a way to kind of bring a little bit better balance for Seattle and giving them a little bit more of a margin for error. Because as you mentioned up top, the defense has been very good. I think you mentioned second in defensive rating. That already gives you a baseline. You end possessions better. You get more juice in transition. You get more drives, generate better shots in the half court because of those drives. You just feel a little bit better about the Seattle process, even if they haven't solved everything yet.
Right there with you.
So I think the only thing that I would... I do wonder like what some of these lineup combinations are going to look like. Because as you alluded to early on, like I think Brittany Sykes is just going to replace Erica Wheeler in the starting lineup. That would be my guess. And so is that also just the closing five? Do we see Seattle close with some neck at the five? We have seen Don Belonga close some games over Ezzie Mabigore, so they're not afraid to go to different front court options. But do we ever see a game where it is Skylar and also Erica Wheeler and also Brittany Sykes and also Gabby Williams, and then you end with Nneka at the five? Like, what are those lineups going to look like? I think that is a lot of defense. That's a lot of rim pressure. If you are concerned about the rebounding, which, again, Seattle hasn't been that good on that front, at least on the defensive glass, like, that could get a little hazy depending on who they're facing. But I am curious to see how often they tap the smaller buttons because of the versatility that Brittany Sykes provides.
I think that kind of depends on who they're facing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much they would love doing that against the Lynx, but maybe they could throw it out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they would love doing that against the Liberty. The Dream, probably. The Mercury, probably. Mm-hmm. The Aces, probably. So, I mean, I think it's nice to have that in the back pocket, but they have so much versatility with their bigs, especially with the way Malonga's been playing of late, that, hey, we can just kind of do this in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I think the general question I would ask you, Steve, before we flip quickly to the Washington side of this, and they've also been busy today, with this move, does this change how you feel about Seattle in the big picture? Like, have they gone from like tier three to tier two? Do they just remain in tier two if you had them there? Just like, how does this alter your outlook of them as we get closer to the postseason?
I mean, tier two is like nine teams right now. What you mean?
Well, when you put it that way.
I mean, if you're going big picture, they fall into six. Tough time to have a losing stretch. You know what I mean? I think they're 2.5 games out of four, something like that. So it's going to be matchup dependent. I think I feel better about their ability to stay strong defensively and score in a playoff series, in a playoff setting. Mm-hmm. But I think it's ultimately going to come down to matchups. So I'm not necessarily feeling worse about the Storm. But I think for me, it's like, okay, I've called them the Connecticut Sun all year. But that Sun team that went on runs, they're going to be annoying. I think this is going to make them more annoying, which is why I kind of highlighted like doubling down on your strength. So, yeah, this defense is going to be for real, and we're going to lock in on that and make this playoff series not fun for you. So I think it probably raises their ceiling a little bit, but I'm not sitting here saying, hey, they're X, Y, and Z. Now, if they were the three seed when this happened, and able to kind of have the positioning, maybe a game behind the Liberty could really knock on a door. I think that would change the math a little bit. Mm-hmm. But with their current positioning, they just have to be as good as they can, in my opinion.
Okay. No, I think that's fair. Like, I think for me, it's hard to argue that the Storm didn't get better, especially once you consider what they sent out in the deal to add Brittany Sykes. And so, health permitting, she's just going to help that basketball team on both ends. But, like, do I feel better about them than I do the Lynx? I don't. The healthy Liberty? I don't. The Dream, with the way that they're playing right now, like, I don't. The Mercury, like, I don't, though I will note, like, it has been a weird stretch for Phoenix as the Stars, you know, I guess the non-Alyssa Thomas Stars are trying to regain rhythm. Satu's been in and out of the lineup. Defense kind of slipped as of late, so that's been interesting to see. But, like, overall, like, I probably still feel better about Phoenix and what they've showcased throughout the year than Seattle right now. So, like, at best, they get to fifth for me. And even with that, the Fever have played well. We'll talk about them a little bit later. The Aces are starting to find some things, and they have, like, at worst, the second best player in basketball, if not still the best player in the world. I still have Asia number one. So they're better, but I don't know if it's changed my big picture thoughts, I guess, to answer my own question on that front.
Yeah, I did not know I was doing this podcast with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
The dunk says, there we go.
Man said it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what your trade is. Okay. But to the Washington portion of the program, again, a 2026 first-round pick from Seattle. Zaya Cook's been waiting. We'll see if anyone picks her up. And Alicia Clark going back to Washington. This has been not the best season for Alicia Clark this year. 51% on twos, only 29% from three, and I'm more concerned with the volume than the percentage because we know she can shoot. Defense hasn't been quite the same. This feels more like we want your leadership in the room, but also, like, having someone, she is more of a four, but having someone that is, like, wing-sized, especially in light of the trade that happened earlier today, might be a little bit helpful. Like, what do you kind of project for Alicia Clark to close out the season? Or do you see her closing out the season in Washington?
I could see it. I mean, I think this gives them the ability to play small to a degree and space floor a little bit. Considering the front court rotation they've had for the majority of the season, you kind of had to play two bigs, and then you had to figure out which two to play together when. So I think there's some intrigue there. I think mentally will help defensively. I think that it, you know, mixing some more of those post ups we've seen from Alicia Clark. I think it's a good space to kind of find some things if you're Alicia Clark. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Like, I think, obviously, the Washington Mystics were pushing for a playoff spot after the Brittany Sykes trade. It's fair to say that they are willing to take a little bit of a step back. We can make it as the 7 or 8 seed if we really push for it, but we're thinking bigger picture, longer term, and I think that makes sense for them. And so for Alicia Clark to not be in a win-now situation, we need you to be at a B-plus level on both ends within your role for this to work. And now more, your shooting will help. Your knowledge of spacing and when to relocate, I think, helps. In theory, the defensive versatility, it helps. But more than anything, we need you to be Alicia Clark, the person, and be able to pour into Kiki Iriafin and Sonya Citron and just kind of helping that ecosystem there. I think it makes a lot more sense for her. I could also see a world where Alicia's like, well, this may be my last season, or at the very least, we're quickly approaching it. I would rather join another playoff team if I can at least survey the market. Is there a contract divorce or a buyout that we can work out here? So I'll keep my eyes peeled on that front. But as you mentioned, Steve, like, I think this is a spot for her to kind of be herself without the pressure of, like, her bench production, or even if she goes into the starting lineup, we'll see what it's going to look like without it being as dire as it kind of felt earlier in the year in Seattle. Cause I think it was what, 7 starts. And then to the bench for Erica Wheeler. And since then, like, it's steady minutes. Now those minutes start to decline. She's a little bit mostly out of the rotation by the time the trade happens. So I do hope she has some kind of a bounce back, whether that's in Washington or if she agrees or she searches for a playoff ready team in the future. Actually, let's just stay with Washington. As earlier today, we got a J.C. Sheldon for a Leah Edwards swap. between the Mystics and the Connecticut Sun. There are also 2026 first round pick swap rights. Those first round picks between the Minnesota Lynx and the New York Liberty, I think those are going to be pretty high picks. So the meat of the deal is Aaliyah Edwards going to Connecticut and J.C. Sheldon going to Washington. So I guess starting with the Mystics perspective, how do you see J.C. Sheldon fitting into the Mystics core?
Well, number one, I think it's a little funny that the they traded picks, which will end up being, what, 14 and 15? And traded players who were drafted 5 and 6 last year.
Like, yeah, I thought it's that was pretty fire.
A little funny. I like the move to add J.C. Sheldon. I think obviously you just have the ability to take a look at a young player, but J.C. Sheldon is someone who I think has improved, I think on both ends of the floor. The shooting has helped, but I think the defense has been pretty pesky for a lot of the season. And so you get a chance to add another younger player. And you get to a chance to kind of bolster your guard room after losing Brittany Sykes, and you kind of clear up the front court rotation logjam, where it was like, how do we get you minutes? Because Kiki, yep, and Shakira, yeah, Steffi Dolson, yep. Hey,
hello, what's going on here?
We're running out of minutes. Emily Inkster, help. You know what I mean? Like, it's just. There's a little bit more freedom there. So I think the J.C. Sheldon move should be good for both her and the Mystics, in my opinion, because I think Sheldon's got a lot more juice than people give her credit for. And I think in Connecticut, it was going to be a logjam for J.C. Sheldon at some point, especially with the way Sanaya's played, with the way Lacan has played. Marina Mabry exists.
Marina Mabry exists.
Yeah, respect her.
Okay.
Did you like the deal for the Mystics?
No, like I think it was a solid move for both sides, but like starting with the Washington side, and a shout out dear friend of the program, Mark Schindler, who threaded a lot of the thoughts that I had on this front. Getting someone in the room that can both knock down threes, but is ultimately willing to take threes in volume, I think is important for the Washington Mystics. Because similar to Seattle, like a team that I've enjoyed, like their spacing concepts and some of the cutting they can get into. But when you're, -5, -7, -10 in 3-point attempts against the teams you're facing, like it just gets kind of tough if you're not knocking down those shots or if you're not forcing turnovers, if you're not winning on the offensive glass. And that's where you get into some of these tight games for the Mystics, where again, having a Brittany Sykes, at least pre-trade, they get to say in the fourth quarter, give me the ball. I'm putting my head down. I'm getting to the free throw line is helpful. And so I think within what Washington already does, with the way that they space, with the way that they cut and relocate, with the general tempo that they play with, J.C. Sheldon should slot nicely into all of those with the added bonus of you can't help off of me as readily as you could with other players and sink into the paint to try to take away some of these drives and some of these roles. And if you do, I am capable of punishing you with threes, and I'm more than willing to punish you. And it's not like she's just a corner shooter. And one of the things that you've talked about as well, Steve, but something that's popped for me with her in Connecticut is just how much more comfortable she seems looking for shots inside the arc. You give her a handoff on the second side, she doesn't mind taking 2 or 3 dribbles, kind of surveying the floor, and I can get into a mid-range pull-up. Like, you don't want her taking 15 of those a game. But the fact that she has also added that level of aggression and that level of competence inside the arc, I think also helps. She's not just going to be a 3-point shooter. And while she is not Brittany Sykes as a defender, obviously a different trade in this case, but while she's not Brittany Sykes as a defender, you mentioned the peskiness, like she is good on ball. And so I don't think Washington adding JC, moving Brittany Sykes, it's not like they're going to go from, it's not like they're going to cut their like full court pressure volume in half now because Brittany Sykes is gone. Like JC Sheldon can very much just fit into that with those high pickup points, that early aggression. She's going to be active off the ball if they ask her to help. And so she just fits really well into what they want to do. So I really do like this for Washington. And I guess quickly flipping to the Connecticut side, I like this for Aaliyah Edwards. Like, I think starting with the defense, as generally aggressive as Connecticut has been, and Washington's also mixed in some at-the-level stuff with their bigs, it's not going to be a culture shock for Aaliyah Edwards. And I think Connecticut ultimately does this a little bit more. And so, like, I do think her best coverage right now is kind of using the mobility and using the active hands to get up to the level or just flat out blitz folks. And so, like, that should be a relatively easy translation for her. My immediate question for Aaliyah, at least this year, because next year, I don't think it's going to be much of an issue. But at least this year, like, I do wonder how much of her time is going to be locked at the five. This isn't as drastic of a front court lockjam as it was in Washington, but I don't think she's just walking into 31 minutes a game in Connecticut either. So I do wonder, like, what the four versus five split for Aaliyah is going to be. But I do think that this is a Connecticut team that wants to get out and run as well. I think they're top three in pace this year, or at least they have been post All-Star break. And so you have some solid, interesting drivers in Connecticut as well. And she is someone that, something that you mentioned during the rookie year, like someone that can get out of roles quickly, can slip quickly. I think some of those openings are going to help those guards in pick and rolls or in handoffs. So that should be a fit there. I just want to make sure she gets some time at the five, though. I guess it's kind of my bigger question, at least this year, because I think that's where you're going to get the best version of her right now.
I mean, I think I would counter that with at least there will be a consistent role to a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, and especially now and in the future, I think this is a good future player for Connecticut to, again, be able to wrap themselves around some young talent as the league is about to maybe not change, but everyone's available to a degree. So let's make sure we have some people that we feel we can build around. And so, you know, Tina Charles is still there, but maybe a ramp down for Tina at some point this season. Maybe that opens up some 5 minutes. Ono's still there. So it kind of comes with, hey, you might have to play a lot of four. So we'll see if the perimeter development kind of takes that leap. I hear the five portion. I just don't know if I'm tied to it. I think it's a, I finally get to play type beat might refresh some things for Aaliyah Edwards.
No, I think that's fair. And quickly to your point about just having a consistent role, three games for Aaliyah Edwards post All-Star break, about a combined 20 minutes across those three games. So I think even if it isn't walking into 30 minutes a night, I think she'd take a consistent 17, 18 with room for more. And I think just in general, I'm sure she's going to be excited to be around Tina Charles for a little bit, get some tips and pointers on that front. So I'm kind of here for it. And again, like I probably feel better about this move for Aaliyah / Connecticut next season when the roster is just more clear. And I think they can just organically clear out a runway for her to just make in, like she's going to start or whatever the case may be. But to your point, just being able to get out there more often, I think should be helpful. And we're not that far removed from her rookie season last year, where she was pretty good and was very good in the second half of the season. So like the skill is there. So, but I'm excited for her. Again, Connecticut just getting all of the Huskies, I think is a funny bit. So I think the fanfare is certainly going to be there for Aaliyah Edwards whenever she makes her Sun debut. But like it for Connecticut, like it for Washington. Is there anything within this deal that we haven't hit on yet before we move?
I think we got everything.
Okay. We will see what pick 14 and 15 looks like, I guess. Would be the other thought that we can add. But all right, with that being said, have not seen a notification on another trade happening yet. We got about 20 minutes to the deadline. So we have time to talk about the deal in which the players involved have actually logged their debuts with their new teams. A deal between the Minnesota Lynx and the Dallas Wings. The Lynx getting Dejounte Carrington in the deal. The Dallas Wings getting Diamond Miller, Carly Samuelson, who has since been waived, but is going to rehab in Dallas. She's out for the year. And a 2027 second round pick. That all going to Dallas. We can start on the Minnesota Lynx side. Dejounte Carrington kind of the bell of the ball in this trade. And in her debut with the Minnesota Lynx, a win over the Seattle Storm, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals and a block. The Lynx won her minutes by 9 points in 18 minutes off the bench. So Steve, I guess what 2-part question for you, what were your initial thoughts about Dejounte Carrington heading to the Lynx and what did you see in her debut?
I mean, I thought it was a really good move for the Minnesota Lynx to be able to get Dejounte Carrington. I thought the fit was going to work just fine. You know, I think that the number one team in defensive rating, being able to add a defender the caliber of Dejounte Carrington while also being the best team in the league, I don't really see what the problem or issue was with adding Dejounte Carrington to this team, especially with what we've seen Dejounte Carrington be able to produce with structure, with the system. And so I think we saw the payoff right away. As you look at the fourth quarter against the Storm, and Dejounte Carrington's guarding Skylar Diggins. And so you're looking at a scenario where DeJounay Carrington can get back to being DeJounay Carrington. The screen navigation, I think, is huge for Minnesota in particular, because they're already good defensively, like very good defensively. They have bigs who have good nuance. They have good help, but they can stay at home. And now if you have someone who's pressuring the ball and can navigate screens on and off ball, boy, it takes a lot of pressure off the rest of your defense. So you're trying to navigate a pick and roll, and you got DeJounay harassing and Alonta Smith also up there. Not the most fun combination of things with help behind it. So as far as the gameplay goes, that was my thing. I think it's a quick thing for her to pick up offensively as well with the way that the Lynx play. Like, there's a structure, there's a system in place. I thought it was kind of funny to watch some of her early plays against Seattle, where it was very clear. Cheryl Reeve just said, go, but we need you to do this and this. Mm-hmm. But in her mind, it was like, oh, I have to make quick decisions. So I think there was a play against Seattle. She ends up looping to the wing, looks in the post. No one's there. Quickly asks, hey, please, can someone come screen for me? So and ended up getting a dime to Jessica Shepherd. So it was very interesting there. I for me, it was a larger deal, though. It's like at some point we got to step back basketball wise and realize and remember this stuff is not linear. Like, this applies to life too, like, but it's not linear. We want to make it linear, but it's not always linear. Like, we saw DeJounay Carrington's growth with the Connecticut Sun. We know the defense is there. We saw a growth in scoring and playmaking. You can always ask with a player how much of that was the role, how much of that is the system, how much of it is usage, how much of it is the players around them. It could be hard to tell. I understand that. But fit and context can always change a player. I think it still made a lot of sense for a growing player like DeJounay Carrington to get a potentially expanding role in Dallas to help a team grow. Felt like a win-win. It wasn't a win-win. I think it's been an adjustment for almost everyone in Dallas. And I think sometimes structure can help a player. And I kind of was thinking about this concept that I've struggled with in the back of my brain for a while when it comes to players, and it's freedom versus empowerment. I've always thought about this. It's a tricky one. On its surface, you probably would say that's the same thing, Steve. What are you talking about? Or why not both? But walk with me, right? You want players to play with a certain level of freedom. That's been a huge evolution in basketball all over the place for the last 10, 15 years, right? Go play. Play in the flow. Go play. You want to empower them to be themselves on the court. But there is a slight difference, right? So let me use an example. I'm going to see how it lands. So Dylan Brooks was empowered to be Dylan Brooks in Houston, right? Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks was free to be Dylan Brooks in Memphis.
Mm. Okay. I see where you're going.
See the difference?
Yeah. Like, I think there, I don't want to cut you off, but I just quickly say, like, I think having an infrastructure in place, whatever that means to you, is kind of where you get into the, like, freedom versus empowerment. I think it's easier to empower players when they know what their boundaries are and they know what their roles are and they can kind of flow within that versus, hey, we need you. Here's the ball. And whatever that means to the player is what you're going to get. But continue.
Yeah. I mean, so are there moments where there's an uncertainty with what type of shots I'm going to get? When is the next shot coming? What's the read? Who knows? Doesn't always excuse performance, but I think things can happen. Like, obviously, in Minnesota, we know the structure's there. We know the movement's there. We know the defense is there. I think one thing with DeJounay in Minnesota, the decision-making is going to be key. Knowing when to make what pass and engaging the defense in a way that continues the advantage for the Lynx is going to be key. I think there were some drives that were positive, and then, oh, I don't know if that pass was there. So I'm keeping an eye on that. But if she could turn the corner, mix in some makes from three, maybe get a couple guard post-ups. Like, I mean, it's easier. It's going to be easier for her to make playmaking reads in Minnesota versus having to create at a level that she may have been asked in Dallas. And I think the defense will return to a high level. I think, obviously, positive returns early. I think it's hard sometimes for defensive players to hit their high levels if they don't believe in the system, or they don't believe in what we're doing, or they don't believe in the execution of it, or there's not enough around them. You know, I think we've seen great defenders go to teams that look a little different. You know, Alex Caruso was a really good defender in Chicago. That defense was not very good. Right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Caruso was able to maintain a certain level. But I think DeJounay and all have a bounce back there. I think, again, contain drives, have guard different matchups, navigate screens. It's a home run for Minnesota, in my opinion.
No, I dig it. I think this deal being a home run was going to be predicated on like how quickly DeJounay was able to kind of settle into what Minnesota already does. And like Cheryl Reeve kind of alluded to this, right? I think post-game of the game, which is like, we just want DeJounay to be DeJounay and just play basketball. We know there's a baseline level of competitiveness that you have, and that certainly shows itself defensively, as you mentioned. She spent some time on Gabby. She spent some time on Skylar. Flew around off ball. So you know she's going to bring that. Offensively, like, we don't need you to do everything. We also don't need you to be, like, a timid part of this. Like, trust yourself. Get downhill when you need to, make the research you need to. And so to your point, Steve, like, I am excited to see how she's able to build off of that. And I think to kind of zoom out to the broader, I guess, analysis of the DeJounay season, I just haven't loved a lot of the conversation around, honestly, I just haven't loved a lot of the conversation around Dallas. That's a whole nother pod we can do. But I think even within the DeJounay thing, it felt like it was either extreme one where DeJounay was not shooting well. She was not finishing well. These are these turnovers. DeJounay's just been bad. She left the Connecticut context. This is who she really is. Blah. Or, sure, DeJounay's doing this, but the coach sucks. There's no structure. These players are bad. It's only Paige there. Yada, yada, and blah. And that's just it. And I'm just kind of looking at this like, surely there's a conversation to be had in the middle. Like, surely we can acknowledge, you know, to your freedom versus empowerment point, there was probably a little bit more freedom on the DeJounay portion. And that's where we got to some of the on-ball reps that we saw and so many of the post seals, which I think we got literally one post seal from DeJounay in that opening game with Minnesota. But we saw that and it's like, okay, we can still evaluate what the decision-making tree is without it turning into DeJounay's a fraud. Like, I don't think we have to do that. And, like, I also think we can criticize, like, some of the lack of structure or inconsistent structure without going into this coach shouldn't have a job. Like, it just makes it odd to have conversations about this stuff. And so, like, when you then zoom into the Lynx are going to trade for DeJounay Carrington, the conversation carries over into DeJounay is either going to be an A+ and the Lynx just now have the title, or did you just see DeJounay? She stinks. Why are you trading picks and Diamond Miller for her? Like, we can just have an earnest conversation about this. Like, I just wish, and this is something I've said on the pod before, like, I do wish we could just have, like, normal basketball conversations. Like, we can, obviously, but I mean, like, the more collective we, to be clear. So, like, that part of it has just been odd. And so to her actual debut in Minnesota, like, I liked a lot of it. Like, I'm glad you touched on that slip pass to Jessica Shepherd. That was what? Opening possession of the second quarter? Went flare for her, got the ball, went and slipped it in right there. Like, that. I love the quick hitters like that.
First play of the second quarter was a...
First play of the second quarter.
Was a designed handback. DeJounay Carrington pinned down, handback. She turned the corner, drew a foul.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that was a drop.
This was early in the first. She drove... cut to the block, realized, oh, I have the space. Got the ball back. Oh, God, please someone screen for me.
Got you. Okay, thank you for the quick correction there. Like, I watched the game, obviously. I was like, I know I clipped this, but okay, thank you for that. But, like, I think there's room for DeJounay to be DeJounay. I think the context for her to make decisions and make good decisions, more specifically, is a lot better. It should be easier in this Minnesota context. And, again, this is Minnesota debut with no Nafisa Collier. Like, you don't even have your MVP, assuming things track this way. I guess we'll see how long she's going to be out and stuff. But you don't even have that player that just draws two almost whenever to take pressure off. Like, this is just general spacing, movement, basketball know-how with Minnesota. And you could see how DeJounay could flow into that and fit into that. So it's hard not to be excited within that lens. Like, I think moving forward, you're still going to have to keep tabs on, as you mentioned, the passing decisions, what the actual finishing is going to be, when she is asked to space and knock down shots, I think she only took one three, if I remember correctly. And that was like a, that I think that was the three coming off of the chase down block that she had. And so, like, she is going to have to knock down shots, or teams are going to help off, or they'll, you know, configure their matchups. We'll put the center on DeJounte. They can flow into other different stuff. So, like, there's still just a level of shot making she's going to have to hit in Minnesota. And so she is, like, a consistent closing piece for them. But it was easy to outline how this would work. And so it was nice to see in game one, it was more of this is how it can work or how it's going to work. So, like, I liked a lot of the debut there. And with this being the price, again, Carly's not playing this year. It's a 2027 second for Minnesota. Like, I don't know how much that pick is going to matter to them considering where they are. And Diamond Miller, who I liked a lot of the Diamond Miller minutes this year, but it was also still pretty clear that, like, she was never going to get the A-plus level of trust from Cheryl, or at least those minutes just weren't going to be there considering what the guard slash wing room is. And so I'm excited for her to get a little bit more burn in Dallas. The debut was quiet for her. But I think if you're Minnesota, you turn all that into a player that was just all defensive first team last year and most improved player. I think you take that gamble.
Yeah. I mean, it's sometimes it's tough because it feels like you end up talking about Diamond Miller, the player, in a bad way. But it just, I think it was clear when Diamond Miller came back, the Lynx had found something different. Mm-hmm. And they were going to roll with that. And so it's like, how do you fit into this specifically, this specific context, which changed her context, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. We're a team that has five players who can do anything. We make quick decisions. We need trust decision-making. We need trust defensively. And I think it becomes one of those things where a young player has to do one thing to stick on the floor. I don't see it. I'm going with X, you know?
Yeah.
And so you turn a player who was valued, but the playing time is going to be shaky, an unfortunately injured player, into DeJounte Carrington as you're the best team in the league. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's just kind of what it was. And so, again, I am rooting for Diamond because I think there's something there. Like, one, just wings her size don't generally have the level of burst and strength that she does. So, like, that itself should be, like, quote-unquote, moldable for a team. And I think with the wings wanting to get up and down the floor a little bit more, I think there's room for her to add to the transition game. As a Dallas Wings team that has generally been very good as an offensive rebounding unit across multiple years and across multiple coaching staffs at this point, the corner crashes from Diamond Miller, I think, are going to be helpful. And I think she at least has the tools to be interesting defensively. And she'll be able to defend or hold up against multiple player types. And so, like, as she just gets the feet wet, because I don't know, did you see or read the quotes from Diamond? She was kind of detailing what the trade process was for her.
What you got?
Well, she found out, I think she found out in the air or shortly after the team landed that she was being traded. And then it was, well, I got to go home and pack. And now I immediately need to go to my new team and here, or go to New York. And here we are. Just like, she hasn't even really had time to settle herself in at all. And so, in addition to just going to a new team, new system, new teammates, etc., even off the floor, like, things are just incredibly unsettled. So, like, I think it was 7 minutes she did not score in her debut with Dallas. I would like to give Diamond Miller a week to, like, unpack her clothes before I have, like, real basketball thoughts.
Unpack her clothes.
Yeah, like, I would like for her to have time to, like, set up a P.O. box or something before I have real basketball thoughts. It just sounds like a real whirlwind for, like, when she found out, how she had to move after she found out. And now here you are, you were playing the New York Liberty, in which your head coach is getting booed by Liberty fans for, again, we're gonna have to do a wings pod at some point, but yeah, that's a lot. I think it's fair to give her a little bit of time to settle in, but, like, what she showcased in Minnesota, just the energy and the athleticism, like, I think there is something there. And I can see the outline of how that can work in Dallas. And so I want to see her get settled in, get consistent playing time. And I think those things will pop in this context.
Well, I mean, I think for me, it's just, it'll be nice to see Diamond Miller play and kind of have the freedom outside of the Lynx context to just go out there and do what Diamond Miller does. Mm-hmm. See if the drives pop. Let's see if there's some room to cut. Let's see if there's some room to seal some players, get some post-ups. Let's see if there's some attacks in transition. Like, let's just see what it looks like.
Yeah. So I am excited to see what that part's going to look like. To quickly circle back to the Aaliyah Edwards, J.C. Sheldon trade, this tweet from Alexa Philippou, as I'm just not seeing this on the For You page. Sources say that while J.C. Sheldon was happy off the court in Connecticut, she saw an opportunity to be better utilized on the court, which this trade to D.C. provides. A win-win for both the Mystics and the Sun. The Mystics get another ball handler following departure of Sykes and a young piece to build around. The Sun, who are also building around young talent in Lacan, Rivers, and Morrow, add Edwards, who wasn't part of DC's long-term plans, to that mix. Interesting about the on-court utilization point for J.C. Sheldon.
I'm trying to hoop.
Give me the ball.
Did y'all not see me hooping? I was hooping.
This is true.
What you mean I gotta sit on the bench? Hey.
Hashtag Marina Mabry exists. But no, I understood.
I mean,
understood.
That is why I said that, but I'm trying to look it up real quick. I'm trying to figure out which month of it that J.C. Sheldon was just hooping. I think it was June. Yeah. 25 minutes, 9 points, 53% from the field, 43 from three, didn't miss a free throw.
Plus defense. Like, yeah.
I would like to show that more.
I could do a little bit more. Yeah, I think the combination of Marina Mabry coming back after a long absence and Layla Lacan, who has just been one of my favorite guards to watch in the league since she's been in Connecticut for what the 3-4 weeks that she's been there, just drives galore. Understandable that JC be like, well, hey, I feel you, but y'all traded for me, and I would like to do more things with the ball, so. This is a lot. This is what, team number three for JC already? This has been a lot of turnover for her, personally.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it was kind of crowded in Dallas, and then you get to Connecticut. Now you're going to Washington. And even then, like, this is going to set up, ideally, next season, like, Georgia Amorse is going to be healthy. But, yeah, some interesting stuff there. But as we reach 3 p.m. Eastern, Steve, I have not seen a notification about another trade as of now. So, like, I think we're going to be safe. If anything happens or anything trickles in, we can circle back naturally. But I think that is going to do it. And in terms of notable 7-day contracts that have been spliced out since we're at that portion of the season, Elisa Peely going to the Sparks, I think reuniting with Lynn Roberts. The Valkyries adding Kyla Charles. The Dream adding Kamaya Smalls. I think Yvonne Anderson took a 7-day contract with the Minnesota Lynx as well. A few others, but wanted to make sure I said their names at the very least. Kyla Charles has been getting rotation minutes with the Valkyries. Played a lot for Dallas earlier this season, so always brings a level of energy defensively. I think she fits right into the ethos of what Golden State is trying to establish, or has established at this point, defensively. So nice to see her in a new spot there. Then Grace Berger also got a 7-day contract in Dallas. I think her is either her second or third one there, so she is back, especially after these transactions. I think that is it on the transaction front, Steve. I think we've done it officially 3 p.m. Eastern. I think we're good. So before we move, do we have any other thoughts on any of these trades that we did not hit on?
Nope. Fun deadline.
There we go. We did it. Oh, one thing I guess I'll add, circling back to the Dejanay deal. As the Wings added Diamond Miller, they did waive Tierra McCowan in the process. I would imagine because of the contract, she's going to clear waivers. And from there, I wonder what the market is going to look like for Tierra McCowan. Someone that can be a monster on the offensive glass, can score, has some defensive question marks, has some motor question marks, but someone that can help. So we will see if anything pops. Post-deadline there once he officially clears waivers, if she hasn't already officially cleared waivers. But we'll keep tabs on that one. That may be another player that we talk about a little bit later in the season if someone picks her up. All right. Two other WNBA news before we shift. The Connecticut Sun appear to be on the verge of being sold, Steve. Just don't know exactly where or to which group. We got the early reports that it was going to be $325 million plus another $100 million invested by a Boston-led group with plans to move the team to Boston. And we immediately got the, nah, I don't know about all that We haven't heard that. And now there is, another Connecticut-based group slash buyer with Hartford as a potential location. A lot seems to be happening without really happening. So I didn't know if you had any Connecticut Sun moving thoughts yet. I'm sure we're going to find out more. But the brow certainly raised, and then it lowered, and then it raised again for me.
Everyone just relax. It's all about the order of the bags, all right?
Yeah.
If you learn nothing over these last few years, it is the sequencing of the bags. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Mm-hmm. Kathy not going to get me.
You cannot trick me. You cannot trick. Okay. So we will see what happens to the Connecticut Sun, but, or where they're going to play. So we'll keep tabs on that, but at least keep the ears and eyes peeled on that front. In more somber news, alluded to it a little bit earlier, but Lafisa Collier did suffer an ankle injury during the third quarter of what was the biggest road win in WNBA history against the Las Vegas Aces. But nasty ankle roll, expected to miss at least 2 weeks. Lafisa Collier naturally having a career year, career high in points, assists, blocks. She's been as efficient as she's ever been inside the arc, getting to the line more, knocking those down at a high clip as well. The defense has been, if not DPOY worthy, at the very least all defensive first team worthy once again. But the Lynx are 3-1 without Lafisa Collier, including the game that we talked about with Dejanay Carrington, including that win over the Seattle Storm. So a couple of weeks without Fee isn't ideal, but this is a team that has played well and with Fee off the floor in general, you know, including the games that she's played, just goes to the bench. A plus 6.4 net rating, Steve, for the Minnesota Lynx in over 300 minutes without Nafisa Collier on the floor. That plus 6.4 net rating would essentially be fourth in the W, or is right on par with the third-ranked Atlanta Dream. That's a plus 6.5 for them. So they've still been a good team. When you have Courtney Williams and Kayla McBride and Alana Smith and Jessica Shepherd, you add Dejanay Carrington and on and on and on, it is still possible to play really good basketball, which the Lynx have done. So we will keep eyes on the Lynx. Oh, actually, do you have any Lynx without Fee thoughts? Any concerns or anything in particular you're looking, paying a closer attention to while she's out?
No, they're a machine.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. We're done with the transactions. We're done with the news, at least for now. And so we can just talk some hoops, Steve. Talk about some things that have caught our eyes as of late.
Buddy, before you start going, look, prepare yourselves now for the playoffs. This is about to be a disgustingly competitive effort from these teams. Look at the standings. Like, I saluted the Atlanta Dream, the Phoenix Mercury, and the Seattle Storm for their efforts to shake things up and the work that they've done to play very well. Then the Storm lost 3 in a row, but then the Fever went on a win streak. And then here's the Aces. And there is 2.5 games separating 3 from 7. There is 1 game separating 2 from 4. There is 1 game separating 5 from 7. And Golden State, good job, great effort. Here come the Sparks,
who are half a game behind because of their own winning streak that was snapped by the Aces, but they have since won 2 in a row after that.
Buddy, buckle up. So we can go wherever you want to go, but this is, hey man, this is going to be some fun down the stretch.
Yes. Except for then there's the Minnesota Lynx, who are just 5.5 games ahead of New York. And then at the very bottom of the standings, because Washington is still technically a game behind Golden State for 8. But again, we will see what that portion of the season is going to look. I guess the funniest thing, Steve, would just be the Mystics making the playoffs anyway. Post trades. Again, they're only a game behind Golden State. They're half a game behind the Sparks at 9. They're within range. So we will see. I will say their first game without Brittany Sykes. Not ideal, but we will see. But yeah, let's bounce around. Extremely wide tier 2 or tier 2.5 of teams, I suppose. But let's start with the Las Vegas Aces, because why not start with the Las Vegas Aces?
All right, folks, let's see. Is Nekias going to say good things or bad things?
The boring answer is C. I'm going to say things about the Las Vegas Aces. Right. But let's start with some good. 5 games ago, technically 6 games ago, the Aces suffered what wasn't their biggest loss to the Minnesota Lynx yet, but a loss nonetheless. And post-game, Becky Hammond was asked about Jewell Loyd, excuse me. Pre-game of the following game, she was asked about Jewell Loyd, and then we learned that Jewell Loyd was going to the bench. Kirsten Bell was heading to the starting lineup. Since that point, Steve, the Aces are 4-1. Do you want to guess what their overall point differential is with their new starting lineup of Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young, Kirsten Bell, Asia Wilson, and Alyssa Smith?
+0.
It is exactly 0 in 42 minutes over these across these 5 games.
Hold on. Mark this down in history. I'm 2-for-2 on these for the first time ever. I have gotten both of these questions correct. Please pause the podcast and clap. Matter of fact, put an ad in after this right now. I'm going to celebrate.
That is fire. You know, verbal ones in the chat for Steve. But a plus minus of 0, which honestly made me laugh when I looked it up, Steve. Because I felt like it was going to be, like, it's 42 minutes. That was going to be like +4 or something. Like, I didn't think they were blowing teams out of the water with the starting lineup. But I felt it was going to be like +4, +5. This is total points, to be clear, not net rating. Seeing it be 0 is incredibly funny. In light of, again, they 4-1, everyone's talking about Jewell Loyd and what she's done off the bench, which worthy of being talked about. Jewell Loyd in these 5 games, 16.2 points per game. She has converted, she's 10 of 14 on twos, so 71% of her twos have been converted. She's shooting nearly 44% from three on 7.8 attempts.
On higher volume.
On higher volume. And so, like, naturally, I've watched these games. I'm like, okay, so, like, what's changed? Like, can I get some numbers to, like, what's actually changed? Like, is she coming off of more staggers now since the Aces love those? It's going to be like, what exactly are you doing? And so I was looking at some play type stuff, Steve, right?
Yeah.
In terms of pick and rolls per 100 possessions, it's down. Yep. Handoffs per 100 possessions, it's down.
Yep.
Off-ball screens per 100 possessions, way down. I think it's like from like 40 per 100 possessions, like 17. Like just drastic drop. The only thing that has really changed for Jewell Loyd in the positive direction is just like, hey, I am spaced. I am shooting it when I catch it.
Yeah.
Like that has been, that is in terms of like actual play type. Again, like that has just kind of been the bit. Jewell Loyd has taken 33 catch and shoot threes per second spectrum over these 5 games. That leads the WNBA. She is 16 of 33 on these shots, Steve. I think the Aces will take that kind of shooting proficiency and ultimately shooting volume. So it's like, I just think about like the lineup change itself. Like you do technically size up a little bit with Kirsten Bell. And the Aces, though, I have been slightly annoyed is probably too strong of a word. But no, actually, no, it's not.
It's accurate.
I'm not even going to do that.
It's accurate. Don't lie to the people.
I was like, can I frame this in a different way? No. I've been annoyed with the defense because the Aces have, and we talked about this earlier in the season, where the Aces have tried to limit the help that they want to show. It's like, okay, can we defend this 2-on-2? But they've been in this weird in-between area. Like, okay, we will switch if we have to, but right now it's kind of lingering. We're going to see if the initial defender's getting beat. If so, then we can turn this into a switch. If not, then we cool. We drop him back. And teams can just ding them with this because of that indecision up top and because they're not loading their help. It's just kind of weird. It has felt like across these 5 games, they haven't completely eliminated that. In fact, Golden State was dinging them early in their most recent game. And if either team could shoot, the game would have felt differently. But either way, those openings are still there, but they have leaned more into flat out switching than they were earlier in the year. And to that end, I think post All-Star break, they are just the switchiest pick and roll defense in the league. If you want to put a number on that. But I mean, just watching the games, you can just kind of see. They have given the switches a little easier than they were earlier in the year to kind of combat some of those openings. And I think having Kirsten Bell and having a little bit more size is helpful. It's helped them end possessions a little bit more. Like overall rebound rate is down post All-Star break, but the defensive rebound rate is up. And I think part of that is because you have more size out there. And you're navigating these switches is not always just Chelsea and Jackie having to end the possessions because of who's down there. So I think that part's helpful. And I think that combined with the freedom that Jewell is playing with offensively and obviously her shooting, knocking down shots to this degree, I think you're finding a better balance with the Las Vegas Aces, at least right now. And even circling back to the starting lineup, again, gave the reveal and Steve guessed correctly that there it's a plus minus of zero right now in 42 minutes. This is with them shooting 46% on twos, which I think is a little bit below their talent. They're shooting 21.4% from three in those minutes. And again, this is only a 42 minute sample, excuse me. I don't think this is that's a five player grouping that is, you know, a 21% from three on a talent scale. Like I think that is just going to be better. And so I would anticipate this being better. And just in terms of the percentage of shots that are taken from beyond the arc, it's about 5 percentage points lower than their overall regular season average. So like, I think as they find better balance on that front, which I guess I'm keeping an eye on some of the spacing from Alyssa Smith on that front, not just the shooting, but like, it's been a lot of spacing to like 19 feet instead of getting behind the corners. I feel like that is just a more, you know, a balance of, or a combination of her being more comfortable with that shot. And also they allow her to crash the offensive glass. And so that's just a better in-between for her. So, like, that's a spacing thing I'm keeping an eye on. But overall, like, I think the output offensively is going to be a little bit better moving forward. And the fact that they have a little bit more size defensively and can more effectively end possessions, I think is helpful for them. And if Jewel's going to play like this, you just feel better. And it's not like she's not going to close games for them if she's playing well. And if you want to zoom all the way out, Steve, we talked about the Alyssa Smith trade a while ago when it happened. Came off the bench in her first game, immediately entered the starting lineup. And since then, the Aces are 8-5. And with the quartet of Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young, Asia Wilson, and Alyssa Smith on the floor, they're plus 24 in 174 minutes. And so it's something that Becky Hammon in general has talked about throughout these last few games, even during some of the losses. I love the slow clap there. But something Becky's talked about is that, like, we're playing better. We're gaining confidence. I'm liking what I'm seeing. She has been talking about trying to get this team to play four full quarters pretty much all season long. I don't think they've hit that, but you can just tell by how she's talking about the team. And again, 4-1 over the last 8-5 over the last 13 games, that they're getting closer to hitting whatever their identity ultimately is going to be. And so it's been an interesting time in Vegas. Things are starting to perk up for them. Also, Asia Wilson remains incredibly good. Jackie Young, I will give you space to talk about Jackie Young more, Steve, because I know you've had a lot of positive thoughts on that front. But Jackie Young playing well, something that I recently asked them about is their chemistry growing in handoffs. A little over 0.8 points per possession last year. They have already ran more handoffs together this season than they did all of last year, including the playoffs, and the efficiency has skyrocketed on that front. So it's been fun to watch them develop it. In addition to them still remaining the best high volume pick and roll pairing in the league. And so they're starting to find some stuff, Steve. They're starting to find some stuff.
Yeah. Do you remember when you made that rant?
Yes, sure do.
When was it?
I think this was like right after I think there was a rant adjacent, like after the Alyssa trade. And certainly like I think a couple of episodes before that, where I'm just like, hey, what is this defense? The offense is interesting because Jackie is still adjusted to how teams are guarding her, trying to decide when she wants to shoot, when she wants to drive all the way to the basket, when she wants to pull up, etc. Chelsea was knocking down shots, but the turnovers were what they were. Jewel's inconsistent, yada, yada, yada. Like we're not too far removed to answer, you know, to zoom out with your question. But like, we're not too far removed from me being like, hey, what is any of this?
I got you. So we're going to call this the Nikias Vegas stimulus package. as the Aces have won 7 of the last 10 games, and I did some quick research going into the podcast today. Last year, I believe Nikias delivered a rant somewhere around June 11th on the Las Vegas Aces, wondering about concern. They were at that time 5-5 or so. They were immediately 16-7. But to be serious, I think the big thing for me was, hey, they just need to find some consistency with what they are doing, some belief with what they are doing. It doesn't necessarily have to be perfect. I think there's room for the Aces to be the Aces. I think this is a league that has said we are not going to allow you to do that. And we have specific things that we're going to poke at. More teams are doing it. Hey, this is what your guards get coverage-wise. Hey, this is how we're going to attack you. These are the points you can get, and they have to navigate that. Sometimes they do well. Sometimes the Minnesota games happen, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's a better decision-making defensively. as far as when to switch. That's been key. I think the lineup changes helped there. Jewel Lloyd obviously playing free, making quick decisions, taking shots. I think when you have KB and Alyssa in the starting lineup, less mouths to feed, which I think obviously is, I think that's also helped Jackie Young to a degree. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, yeah, a lot of this is shifting to you. And I think Jackie Young's done a really good job. Really enjoyed this stretch of just playmaking and scoring from Jackie Young. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily new. It's not necessarily surprising, but just the decision-making has felt really good as far as you're in a drop, I'm taking these steps, you're coming with me, and I'm in control of this possession, as opposed to solely playing at her pace to a degree and engaging the defense. But, okay, do I take the floater now? Do I get to the pull-up? No, I'm making a read, and I'm going. There's an under. We're going to a rescreen. I'm getting off of it. You know, I think empty side actions with her and Asia have been incredibly hard to guard for teams, mm-hmm. and it's been really positive for them. So that's been it's been good to see from Jackie Young to for her to do that. And I think Melissa Smith's been solid. You know, to your defense point, hey, we can switch more, but we can have a little bit of nuance sometimes. You know, the weak side defensive help is still not great, but we can mix that in. So I think that's a good sign for the Aces, who at least know they can do it, which is going to help you in scenarios where you're having to find it. Mm-hmm. I think that was the big positive. We get our defense to a certain level, get our offense up to a certain level. We know we can compete. Let's go do it.
Yeah, there you go. And like to the find it piece of the port of the program, like the easiest thing to point is just the 3-point shooting. Like again, Jewel shooting well, but they haven't had the abundance of shooting pretty much throughout this entire season. Like Jewel started out hot and then cooled off. Jackie had some stretches, but hadn't really pulled it together, especially since she's taking more off the bounce. So that makes sense. And so like the easiest boon for the Aces to kind of point to is like, at some point, we are just going to shoot better collectively as a team. And like, if that happens while the defense finds more comfort, which quickly on that note, I think this is something the great Callie Finn was asked about, and Becky and other players have talked about post-game recently, is the players handling their own defensive scouts. And like, they're coming up with stuff. And it's been a more collaborative effort there. So to your point about like understanding what they're doing and just having belief in what they're doing, on a very basic level, it's easier to believe in what you're doing when you're the one putting it on the table. at least you would think so.
Can I be respectfully messy?
Sure.
Man, y'all ain't listening to what we're doing. What do you want to do?
Since you got your degree and yeah, it's... Yeah. That should help. But no, like if you lock in on that front, the defense feels better, and now you're starting to shoot, which means you can set that defense a little bit more. This is how the Aces find their flow. And this is how they become the proverbial team no one wants to see in the first round of the playoffs or beyond, depending on who they face. So just going to quickly give some Aces thoughts, because as Steve alluded to already, I have certainly been like, hey, what is this? This doesn't seem great. Oh, there they are. Oh, it's gone again. Oh, no.
Now, here, crucially, you do that within the first 45 seconds of the game. Who's your next team?
You loud. All right, well, we'll stick in this bracket of similar records. We'll talk about the Indiana Fever, Steve, who continued to play well overall. Post-All-Star break, they're 5-2. They are 4th in offense, 5th in defense, 4th in net rating during this stretch. Ending positions at a high level. And this is kind of a continuation of a conversation that we've had like on the pod and offline, but I continue to be impressed with what their defense has been in terms of the pressure, in terms of the physicality. Them ramping things up with their bigs have been pretty interesting, because we talked about the switches earlier in the year, but now just getting, hey, you were trying to run a pick and roll down the sideline, it's not always just going to be ice coverage. We may just jump you and let's see what you do about it. Like, again, not inventing anything on that front, but like it has been fun to see them sprinkle that in a little bit more over these last few games. That aggression stands out. And offensively, continuing to find things. Kelsey Mitchell has been on an absolute heater. She's 3rd in scoring post All-Star break, a little under 23 points per game. A bombing away from three. The drives continue to hit. I've enjoyed as of late some of the playmaking from Kelsey Mitchell, Steve. And this is something that I have not necessarily hammered home on the pod, but it's one of those, like, when I'm talking about Kelsey Mitchell versus, like, other guards in her tier or around her tier, the tie break always kind of starts with, well, this player has either more playmaking responsibility and or they are better passers than Kelsey Mitchell. And so, like, seeing her grow a little bit or showcase a little bit more aggression as a passer, some of these pocket passes when they go to empty side actions, some of these tight window throws that she's making, I've been like, okay, I'm nodding at my TV or my laptop screen, however I'm watching the Fever game, whether it's live or, you know, a day after or whatever. And it's like, okay, if Kelsey's sprinkling in more of these in addition to I can just beat you off the bounce, on top of here's yet another stagger for Kelsey Mitchell that flows into a handoff, which those progressively getting lower and lower on the floor kind of makes the passing reads easier for her. She's getting into some of these quick pocket passes. I've liked that subtle adjustment from Indiana. I've really enjoyed the Kelsey Mitchell experience offensively and defensively, getting after it. Doesn't always win, but she's taken on some tough assignments as of late. She's had to deal with some size disadvantages on the defensive end, and she is getting into jerseys and pressuring the ball. She hasn't always won those routes, but, like, it's not easy to exert that kind of effort defensively while having that kind of scoring load and seeing some of the covers that she sees. And she's just kind of nailing it. And so I want to give some praise to Kelsey Mitchell for how well she's played.
She's been incredible this year. I think it's I don't want to say goes under the radar, but it's been a really strong effort from Kelsey Mitchell. I think coming off a whole month of July where you shoot 48% from the field, 42% from three, with the load you've been asked to carry, she's been great off ball all year. But I think, you know, getting her in movement sets, getting her easier reads, as you mentioned, helps the Fever overall, helps them find their flow. I think this is a team that understands, okay, we have to execute. We have to set screens. We have to look for the second, third, fourth option. When we get a chance to transition, we have to go. You know, you mentioned the defense. We have to be active and physical off ball. You know, when you watch the Fever, look and see their weak side defender. Someone's touching someone. Someone's trying to deny something. You know, someone's, you know, the effort is there consistently from them on that end. And I think overall, when it comes to the Fever, the big thing was for me was, can they put everything together? And I think the injury to Caitlin Clark has put them in a position where they had to. You have no choice. Defensively, you are going to have to play like this if you want to have success. And offensively, we can't just run pick and roll every time, or we can't, you know, run stagger for Caitlin Clark. We have to figure it out. We have quick shots, we got them. But if not, you know, push and transition, get into something else, find your flow, be aggressive, get the ball moving. And so I think that's been the most important thing. They've figured out the formula they need. And now you maintain that, you get Caitlin Clark back, who knows?
And so, like, I think it starts there. And then naturally, again, Aaliyah Boston has also been very good. And then, you know, again, we've talked about Aaliyah on the pod before. It's nothing new. But that continued excellence on both ends, certainly helpful. Like, again, more defensive versatility. It's not just drop. It's not just at the level. She's mixing in some of these late switches. The fact that she can execute multiple coverages helps that Indiana Fever defense, because you don't know what's coming exactly. Like, you already have to work so hard to get open, to bounce off your earlier point about some of the off-ball denials. I remember we were watching, I can't remember which Aces Fever game we were watching during the watch party, and I'm just like, every possession, hey, look, it's another denial of a stagger from the Indiana Fever. Like, they just do that. It just kind of wears on you. So Aaliyah being able to kind of navigate that space, like, okay, here's the denial. You might have beat it. Okay, am I actually dropping? Do I need to come up and help? She's done a really good job of kind of playing the cat and mouse game in that area. So defensively, I've liked it. Offensively, oh boy, she's hitting people, Steve.
Yeah, every time Aaliyah Boston, compliment her. Every time Aaliyah Boston has a post up, the Mark Henry theme song plays in my head. Continue.
Oh no, but yeah, it is, and I say this complimentary because I know, like, Aaliyah's gotten to some skirmishes this year, and even going back to last year, like, she has some battles with bigs, but within the basketball sense, I am running down the middle of the floor. There is a seal opportunity. I'm not directly involved in action. You are coming with me, and this is going to be a foul of some sort. And, like, her ability to carve out that space consistently, one, I think it just wears on opponents. Like, even if they end up winning the rep or miss, forcing a miss, you got to do that again in about 28 seconds. Like, that is just a lot to deal with Aaliyah Boston. But she's just doing such a better job of carving out that space early. When she does get these post touches, she is hitting, and then I think she's pivoting in a cleaner way. She's creating cleaner shot windows for herself inside the arc and around the rim. I think the finishing is perked up on that end. I feel better about her on that front. And the passing continues to pop. Like, she can just flash to the middle of the floor, or if she gets an early pass early in the possession, I can decide. We're going to a handoff here. Cool. Or you want to reject that? You want to cut down? I can hit you with this pass over the top. She has just become a really complete center on both ends of the floor. And she, you know, talked about Kelsey. I think her and Kelsey are just going to be in the all-W conversation this year. I don't know if one or both of them make it. It is still a deep pool, even with all the injuries across the league. But just in terms of how well she has played, she has certainly earned her way into that conversation. Like, I think she probably has a slightly better chance than Kelsey, if I had to guess. I don't have an official ballot. But Aaliyah has just been good. And so I wanted to highlight her as well. Did you have Aaliyah thoughts? Felt like you were hopping in there.
No, I made one joke.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. And then just quickly, Ari McDonald has just been a godsend since he's been in Indiana. The ball pressure, the drives, the quick trigger threes have been fun to watch. Natasha Howard continues to play well after what was a shaky start, at least in terms of shot making, the start of the year. But she has just been quietly very good and very important on both ends. Her just deciding, you know what? Forget my three-point shot. I'm just going to roam around. I'm going to hit people with screens. I'm going to late dive to the basket if I need to. And that gives my guards or my wings or whoever some late passes to hit if they don't have anything. Or if the shot goes up, I am now crashing the offensive glass. And defensively, I can also execute multiple coverages. And in terms of like the actual aggression, she's doing more of that than Aaliyah naturally. And so I'm going to, I can hedge out. I can trap you. I have long arms and active hands. Like, these can just be deflections and turnovers. We can get out in transition. I help end possessions when I'm not directly involved. When we are do get into some of our off-ball switching, if we don't like the matchup, I am communicating. I am scramming Kelsey Mitchell out of here. I am scramming Ari McDonald out of here. Or if they get caught, I am timing out the double team, if not perfectly, then pretty darn close to it. And so you don't get an early advantage there. Like, she's just putting out a lot of mini fires on the back line for Indiana. So, like, even if Aaliyah is their best interior defender overall, her job is made easier by what Natasha Howard has been doing on the back end. So, like, I just wanted to give her the salute on that front as well. Oh, and Sophie Cunningham has just been a flamethrower since entering the start lineup, since Caitlin Clark's been down this third time. Since July 16th, because Caitlin played on the 15th against the Sun. 11 points per game, Sophie's shooting nearly 52% from three. I think the Fever will take that, and she's hit plenty of big shots in fourth quarters as well. So wanted to make sure we got that in there as well. But the Fever just playing well, and to your overall point, Steve, just finding stuff. And last thing I had, Steve, I had like broader Sun and Storm thoughts, but since you talked about with the trade, I can just kind of wait and build up a larger sample on that front. Just want to give a quick salute to Rekia Jackson, who has found more of comfort within what the Sparks want to do offensively. I remember this had to be probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. Someone asked Lynn Roberts pregame about Rekia Jackson, just how her just kind of slotting in, and her shot profile changed a little bit. And Lynn Roberts, very glowing review of Rekia. And like, there was a, you know, the math is the math in terms of some of the mid-range shots versus the threes, but like, we still want to empower Rekia to take the shots that she's comfortable with, et cetera, and finding the balance there. It's really informative stuff there, but just overall, the scoring talent has always just been there. Someone that can bully small defenders, someone that can flow into pull-ups. Something that we talked a little bit about earlier this year, even when the shots weren't going down, was Rekia seems a lot more willing to take threes off the bounce and against unders. And so the fact that she is currently in a stretch where she is knocking down those threes off the bounce, knocking down spot-ups while also doing the other stuff, she can sprinkle in these pull-ups when necessary, but you see the drives and you really see the quick hitting post-ups. Like, we have seen some really fun design looks by Lynn Roberts to get Rekia some touches against mismatches or even just against her matchup, because she has a size advantage over just about everyone when she's playing the three. She just looks good. She's competing defensively. Like, there are still some off-ball possessions where I'm like, ooh, I need you to look at what is happening while also having a feel for where your matchup is so you don't get turned around. But overall, the defensive effort is better. But even just quickly going back to the offense, her last nine games, 18 points per game on near 57 true shooting, 35% from three on moderate volume. And again, having some fun inside the arc, some random clashes on the offensive glass, which is an extension of what we saw from her during her rookie year as well. And the Sparks overall, that offense has been elite. Kelsey Plum, Azaree Stevens, De'Erica Hamby, all putting immense amount of pressure on defenses, especially when they're within action or in action together. But wanted to give the quick salute to Rekia Jackson, who has played very well.
No, I mean, let's stay on the Sparks. I mean, with Rekia, I think you really putting it together. So, I mean, 20 or more points in three of the last four games, 20 or more in five of the last seven games. I think a lot of the concern was maybe the usage or the consistency, but she really found it. The drives always stood out, but you mentioned the post-ups, you mentioned the seals. I think getting to her spot, feeling comfortable within what they're doing. I think overall for the Sparks, I've got some Sparks thoughts, but being able to mix Rekia in at the four as well, mm-hmm. playing next to Cam Brink. So now you get a little bit of, I have an advantage. You put teams in a bind where, okay, well, who's going to guard Rekia? We put a big on Rekia and Rekia's going to drive. We put someone who's too small, Rekia's going to post up. And so that's been really fun to watch the Sparks figure that portion out. And she's been playing at a really high level. I just think the Sparks have been really fun. I've enjoyed watching them get healthy and watching the pieces stick together in a cohesive way. I was down on the Sparks for a lot of the season. I thought their players were playing well, but it was just an inconsistency. Didn't feel like it was cohesive as far as making a defense move or shake or anything like that. But this is a team that's playing with belief. They go up and down the court, and they are getting after it. I think one thing I'd want to say is I want to give a salute to Kelsey Plum, who has been playing at a super high level. You know, we're talking about career high, 6.2 assists, I believe. I think she has
diamond
six,
out.
Six straight games of six or more assists. Post All-Star break, averaging 21 points a game, 48 from the field, 40% from three, 7.8 assists. I've been really impressed by what Kelsey Plum has done during this stretch for the Sparks. And it's not just the scoring. I think it's just been some really good playmaking as well. Just setting up screens, making reads, understanding when the defense is committing, getting it to the bigs, having multiple bigs to play off of, I think is a big one. But she's been getting downhill. She gets in the paint, the deceleration, the Euro steps, mixing in the Nash dribble, just keeps you off balance. And so I think Plum's been really, really good for them. I think Cam Brink being back helps. I think, you know, obviously sometimes the aggression can lead to fouls, but just has a knack for the positioning when you watch her, the timing, the footwork when she's protecting the rim, even in a drop where it might look a little bad for 0.5 seconds. It feels like she gets to the right spot, contains, contests. I just have enjoyed what they've put together. Azrae Stevens been lights out all year, mixing in threes and drives. Hamby's been very good all year. You can kind of feel it come together. It's almost one of those things where it's like, it's a shame your reward may just be the Minnesota Lynx. It's a shame your reward might be that. But, I mean, this is a team that's won 9 road games. They're second in the WA in road wins. They just got their 4th home win.
That's like the problem.
So yeah, I wanted to salute the Sparks, man. They've been a joy to watch.
I'm right there with you.
And also, you know what? Shout out to real point guards, Julie Aleman and Julie Van Loo. Come and do our job. If you're not paying attention, we will score.
We will drive. Yeah. What was it the end of the Seattle game?
Yeah, they forgot about Julie Aleman. She's like, ha-ha!
No, I ended up clipping that possession because, like, the Sparks were setting up this Kelsey cross screen for, I think, De'Erica, who was initially spaced on the left wing. And before Kelsey could even get there to set the screen, Julie Aleman just beat Skylar Diggins to the rim. And I was like, huh, that sure is something. But I like the shout there to the Cam Brink point. She's played 3 games. She's played 42 minutes. 12 stocks, 9 blocks, 3 steals, 9 fouls. So we will like for her to stay on the court because when she's on the court, she's very impactful defensively. I think she will hit shots at some point. Like, I've been intrigued by some of the drives early on so far, even if they haven't, ended in made baskets yet. The comfort there is interesting. She has certainly been willing to pull from deep. And so we'll see how that part of her game expands as well. But yeah, defensively, she's just been nuts. Also, welcome back, Ray Burrell.
Yes.
Who it just feels like anytime you turn her head, well, there she is with another offensive rebound. Oh no. And she's just a ball of energy. I enjoy Ray Burrell. Also shooting a little under 36% from three post All-Star break. The spot ups are there, but like the cutting, again, the corner crashes have been fun. Defensively, she's getting after it. I do want the Sparks to find something defensively. Because earlier this year, it's just like, hey, we just gonna trap. Or he's going to have our bigs play aggressively, which made some sense considering like De'Erica and like Azrae has the length and all the good stuff. And teams were kind of dinging them as they were also trying to find things offensively. Now the offense has hit a level and like they've kind of dialed down some of the blitzing and hedging. It's kind of turned into like we're a step below the level, at least with like Azare, for example. And we could turn this into a late switch if necessary, but we're going to trust you to navigate. And like, I understand the attempt, but that hasn't been clean either. So like once that kind of settles in, if they're able to find a nice mix of stuff that they like defensively, the offensive ceiling is just there. Shoot, the offensive floor is there. So if they can tighten things up a little bit defensively, this is a team that you do not want to see. That is not going to be fun. Post All-Star breaks, I just pulled this up. The Sparks second in offensive rating, which is good. They are 12th in defensive rating, which is bad. A plus 3.7 net rating is third in the league, which, again, that's a testament to just how good the offense has been. But, yeah, gotta find some stuff. Gotta find some stuff defensively. But I think that'll do it for me.
Come on. We can't salute a team that just knows who they are.
We can.
We're going to try on this end, but if not.
We're going to get these buckets. But I am glad that you hit on the finishing package from Kelsey Plum, in addition to the playmaking. But, like, my goodness, the footwork is filthy. It's so good. She is, like, getting to the line more than she ever has. Like, she's learned the tricks of the trade on that end, the subtle nudges, the decent. Like, it's just been a blast to watch. Like, the end of that Sparks Liberty game, I think is what it was, where Rekia ends up getting the game-winning basket. But the drives that KP had in that fourth quarter before we even got to the game winner, just nuts, complimentary. So shout out to the Sparks. I'll save my Sun and my Storm thoughts. One question for you, Steve, before we shift to the NBA side, and then whatever else you want to hit on. Emma Bieseman, New York Liberty, she's played some games now. How do you feel about the utilization? How do you see things shifting when Breonna Stewart comes back? Like, how have you felt about the Emma Bieseman experience so far?
Well, I mean, it was funny when Emma Bieseman made her debut and she just said she gave the Liberty a body, but her presence checked a lot of what the Liberty struggle boxes were without Stewie. I think just having, obviously, the talent, but the size and the versatility on both ends of the floor just fits into what the Liberty want to do. And I think you felt a difference with New York. Obviously, the losing was the losing. But on both ends of the floor, they kind of had to shape shift a little bit on the fly, and you realize how important Stewie is to everything. Mm-hmm. The spacing was still there offensively. There wasn't the same bite to the flow, right? So it's like, okay, we have Sabrina and Jonquel in action. Hey, now Leonie Fibich is a screener, which is fun, and sometimes you can get some rolls, but also teams can just be like, I will switch. Mm-hmm. Steffi Talbot's a screener, which is fun, but the defense had help points. They found comfort. They were able to find a rhythm. You saw how important Stewie was defensively as far as the size went with the weak side defense. Like, I think Jonquel is really good defensively on and off the ball, but teams could just put Jonquel in action and trust they could find something out of it. We're going to test this drop. Is it a late switch? If we have a late switch, can we get it back to that other matchup that we like? Is it a trap or a hedge? Can we find the pocket? And then the help behind Jonquel was just so much smaller when she was up and involved and engaged in action. And it was tough for them to sustain. It kind of put them with some smaller lineups, which pushed them back in the Liberty box of, can their guards keep the ball in front? So it's, we defend the action well. Now we get beat off the drive. Someone scores. Now we got to try and get it back on the other end. And also, other Liberty point, teams are really poking at Sabrina in a different way. Sabrina found the comfort with switching. Hey, I guard X amount of people. If we know very quickly they will scram switch if it's not one of those people. Teams, whew. All right, here's this switch. Now you navigate this screen on ball or off ball because that's not a switch for you. Or you switch, they scrammed you out. We're going to kick it to that person. So you have to close out and defend that action or another screen. Like, you have to do more stuff. So it's intriguing to watch that. But back to Bieseman, I think you saw Jonquel was able to play more cat and mouse in pick and roll, knowing there were size behind her. I think Bieseman held up containing drives and protecting the rim. Offensively, can space, a lot of space to work with in the post. So we'll see if as more time builds, what that opens up for the Liberty, especially with if you're talking about when Stewie comes back. Second unit lineup's going to be,
yeah, that's going to be rough
to deal with. Because I mean, that's an unbelievable amount of time to be able to have high quality bigs on the floor. Pick and roll, it's been interesting to see. Not an automatic switch by most teams so far, So mm-hmm. there have been some pops that have made defenses go, oh, we need to rotate. And there's been some short rolls where people are like, oh, we need to help. And it's drawn some more attention, which is a little bit of an interesting dynamic for the Liberty. So I've enjoyed that. Good hub work to hit cutters, get a swing, go right into a dribble handoff. It fits. It's been fun. So we'll see how it grows. But the Liberty needed it.
Yeah, I think just as they try to get healthier, just in general as they hit the stretch of the season, a little juice could have been needed. And I think having Emma Mesa midfield that role feels overqualified for that portion. But a godsend, needed the bodies, etc. Like, I'm glad you hit on, like, the passing has probably been the most fun portion for me right now with Emma. Where they just kind of kick it out to her on the wing, and you don't know if she's going to hand it off. She's going to fake the handoff and then hit a cut, fake the handoff, flow to somebody else, fake the handoff and drive. And, like, she just has a sense and a feel to her that I think is just going to vibe with what the Liberty want to get into. And one of the earlier thoughts that I had, I think this was during the Wings game, where I can't remember if it was a turnover or if it was just a miss, but, like, outlet goes to Sabrina. Sabrina immediately hits Emma Mieseman, and then she gets to attack. And she drives, and it turns into a post-up, and I think it turned into a kick from there. And I'm just like, you're not supposed to have bigs that can just kind of lead your fast break like that. You know what I mean? You think about a bigs that, hey, this big may be able to shoot. You got to watch them as a trailer. Or, like, you're Camila Cardoso. She is incredibly tall, but she runs the floor hard, so she gets an early seal. Here's the pitch. You dribble into whatever you want to get into. Dribble into a post-up, just attack the basket, dribble into a handoff. Like, that level of early offense versatility with what the Liberty already provide talent-wise, and this is, again, Stewie's out. Like, they're still missing pieces. The high end of that is just going to be kind of nuts, I think. And so it's been cool to see the flashes for that. I would like to see Emma just finish more things. Like, it's been two games so far. But, like, I like the Liberty being intentional about giving her, like, some drawing up some early post touches for her, but, like, she just has not finished. I think those are going to start to fall. But, like, waiting on that to perk up. But it's been fun to kind of sink my teeth into so far with Emma Mesa. I think she's going to be a very good fit there. And with that, any closing W thoughts, Steve, before we end things with the NBA section?
I have one single question for you since we're saving Storm thoughts for next week.
Okay.
Who do you feel better about right now, this second, the Atlanta Dream or the Phoenix Mercury?
The Atlanta Dream.
All right.
At this very moment, as of August 7th, insert time here, that is my answer. Shout out Nas Hillman. Okay, to the NBA. First, on the extension side, the Lakers and Luka Doncic agreeing to a 3-year extension over $160 million. He will not be hitting free agency next season, Steve. The Lakers have done it. They have acquired Luka Doncic, and now they have extended him. And this is after Luka got into better shape and had stories written about that shape and all the things surrounding Luka Doncic body watch. But he's back. He's locked in. San Antonio Spurs and De'Aaron Fox agreeing to a 4-year deal worth at least $229 million. SpotTrack had it at $222. The tweet from Shams Charania had it at $229. I think that is just with escalators and things like that, or incentives and things like that. Either way, whole lot of money. The Spurs max out De'Aaron Fox. Any thoughts about either of those extensions? Did anything pop for you on that front?
I didn't know there'd be that much discourse about De'Aaron Fox, to be honest. I don't think San Antonio traded for him to not pay him the money. I thought it was interesting. I saw someone, like, build a list of point guards to try and, like, say De'Aaron Fox is not top X. Mm-hmm. Which I kind of took it as, well, that's why De'Aaron Fox got paid, because if you don't have one of the top ones, you sure do need somebody. Like, De'Aaron Fox is pretty good. I don't mm-hmm. know if people forget that. I mean, he's got the blend of drives and shot making. I would like to see what San Antonio builds things around this year. I'm intrigued to see that. I think mm-hmm. midseason teams are just like, hey, man, we're going to go ahead and switch this stuff, buddy.
We don't care.
That's cool. So, yeah. Can he get back to getting downhill and playing with force? But other than that, solid bit of business. I mean, he was a part of the future for them. Mm-hmm. So it's not a surprise.
Oh, I got you. Like, the Spurs re-signing De'Aaron Fox, like, duh. You're not trading him. Even though, again, we talked about it at the time, the beauty of this trade for the Spurs is, like, they didn't give up any of their A-plus stuff to do it. But, like, to your point, no, they want to trade for him to just let him walk, naturally. I was a little surprised that they went to full max in the offseason. I thought there would have been a little bit of, well, let's see a little bit more of this. Because again, he would be slated to be an unrestricted free agent. You can't play too many games. But I thought there would have been a little bit of wiggle room, or a little bit, like, if it's not, let's say if it is the 229 figure, would it have been like 4 for 190 or 4 for 200 instead of the full 229? Like, I thought they would have tried to get into some of that at the very least. But to your point, I bounce off of that. Like, he is just good. And notable quote from De'Aaron Fox. After the extension was announced, what'll be different going forward is fans will see me play with 10 fingers, which is noteworthy considering that he suffered a finger injury in training camp and played through it the entire season. And so if you're concerned about De'Aaron Fox was what is the jumper going to look like, having a tendon injury, I think, on his shooting hand, probably not ideal for that. And I think that also plays into teams just being like, all right, well, we'll duck under, we'll also switch. Let's see what you do about it. And he still averaged like 24, 5, and 6 last year within that. Like, I think he is going to be better next season. I do think, though, there is a level of consistency that he's going to have to hit on both ends. Like, naturally, you want to see the shooting bounce back a little bit. But something that we've talked about before, Steve, is him getting more comfortable with the pull-up kind of turned into him defaulting to the pull-up, at least for me. And it was like, okay, is there a better blend that could be found between taking these shots when teams are trying to take away the drives? And can you still force the issue because you have this level of speed and craft inside the arc? Because this was, I think, a career low in terms of shots at the rim or percentage of shots at the rim for him last year. And so, like, finding a better blend there. And defensively, when he ramps it up, he is incredibly good. When he does not ramp it up, he's still athletic, but he's not as good. Just hitting a consistent level there, I think people will be a little bit quieter about the max figure if he hits that level of consistency. And I think he can. He's clearly capable, in my opinion. So just got to see it. So that's where a little bit of my surprise was, like, ooh, they just went straight to it without, you know, any kind of negotiation on that front, or at least it appeared that way. But he's still a very good guard. And as for the Luka portion, like, just hat tip to the Lakers, I suppose, pulled that off. A Herculean effort to sign Luka Doncic to a lot of money. But in all seriousness, that does just kind of set them up for whatever moves they want to have around the edges to close off this offseason. And naturally, you are now starting to build towards the Luka Doncic era in earnest. And of course, there is like the LeBron of it all, but he is a member of the Los Angeles Lakers, and I don't think that's going to change within the next like 3 or 4 months at the very least. So I don't have any deeper thoughts than that until then. So to close things off, the Boston Celtics got a little bit busy. They signed Chris Boucher to a one-year deal. Thanks to vets minimum there, $3.3 million. They also traded George Niang and 2 second-round picks to the Utah Jazz for RJ Lewis Jr. Ultimately, want to get a little bit more comfy under the tax. Want to generate a trade exception if we can. Any Boston Celtics thoughts? Do you like the move for Chris Boucher?
I like the move for Chris Boucher. I mean, I think, obviously, if you're Boston, you move on from George Niang and you save $30 million in luxury taxes. You get why you did it. But Boston is going to be an interesting team. You got to maintain some level of what we had to a degree, have some level of versatility. We need some bigs that can space the floor and shoot. So Boucher kind of fits that. I'm intrigued to see if the drives maybe pop here, if you could drive some closeouts in Boston. But you know, if you're retooling, getting Chris Boucher, you can trust him, quality, got the shot, good space. I like the move.
I like it. I think for this being like an August signing, it's hard to do much better than that in the front court. Like, he has just been a productive bench piece for the Raptors forever at this point. You already mentioned the shot making that he can get into, some of the shot blocking as well. I guess I'm just like, overall Boston thought, it's just like, ooh, I feel like they're just going to see a lot more switching with Jason Tatum out, which, like, duh, they're missing their best player. And so, like, if Chris Boucher sees a higher volume of that, what does that look like for him when he's in action with, like, Peyton Pritchard or whatever? But overall, like, this is a solid depth piece. And, like, they needed another dart throw there in terms of what the front court rotation looks like right now. A lot of players that I am intrigued by, but, like, no one that is just, like, quality, that is just, like, surefire starter level, at least heading into the season. So having someone like Boucher where you know what you're getting I think is going to be helpful. And you get even the minimum. So good stuff for me. And you already mentioned save some money with George Niang. Back to Utah for George Niang. So we'll see if Utah flips him again at some point before the trade deadline. But if not, I think the shooting will help. And I think the Niang contract is going into the large trade exception that was created when they sent John Collins to the Clippers. So that's how you get that done. So there you go. And Ricky Council to the Brooklyn Nets on a one-year deal. I would like to see more of the drives and random rebounding from Ricky Council. We'll see what the playing time looks like in Brooklyn. It's a roster deep with interesting front court players. We'll put it that way. But we will see what that portion looks like. Steve, do you have any Ricky Council thoughts, or is that going to do it?
The horns have been hit.
Okay. Well, in that case, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. Continue to rock with us in the Dunker Spot watch parties. We're having fun. We also have some fun announcements coming soon, so stay tuned on that front for more Dunker Spot content. But in the meantime, we appreciate y'all for rocking with us, and we will catch y'all later.
Why KG got a hoodie on in the summer?